The Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of The Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company, from seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
Gold and oil rally as stocks drop. Political scandals on the rise. More on the Robo ripoff with our guest, Kevin Hoffman. All this and much more on episode number 510 of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. Well, hello there, Andrew Horowitz, your host of the Disciplined Investor here. It is Sunday, May 21st, 2017, and I hope you had your seatbelts tightened for last week's action because it was pretty wild. I mean, we had some really incredible moves when it comes to markets after we saw such a just a narrow range of ups and downs for some time. As a matter of fact, Wednesday was the largest drop on the S&P for months and months and months. Clearly the worst day of the year for 2017 so far. And that was on the heels of the firing of FBI former Chief Comey and some comments and revelations, or at least some, some comments and reports out of various media that there could be more than meets the eye when it comes to the reasons why Comey was fired, and Comey was then saying he was going to provide some documents on this. I don't want to get into the whole dribble about this because we don't really know what the real story is. It seems that we're getting a lot of back and forth between the FBI, and we're seeing that senators are now up in arms. We're seeing the White House is denying. We're seeing that they're coming out with other versions. I don't know. The bottom line is, I can tell you this, whatever the reason is, whatever the outcome's going to be, this kind of confusion, turmoil, and question is not a good thing for markets. We know one of the things that we've talked about so many times is that confusion, lack of clarity, is something the markets don't really like to see. And when we see something like this, we see gold rallying. We see that the markets come in pretty hard and get pretty crazy. We saw that here in the U.S. on Wednesday. We saw that there was some additional conversation out of OPEC and Russia that they're going to extend the production cuts for at least 6 months, it seems. And all of a sudden, as oil was perfectly timed, by the way, as oil was hitting down by the lows of 46 and change. Now it's kind of moving back up the last few days, and they're going to keep on pressing. I promise you, they're going to keep on pressing this button. Yes, we're going to have production cuts. Yes, we're going to have production cuts because they need oil prices higher. No question about that. And that's good for markets, at least one sector. The oil-related stocks and companies that have anything to do with oil and somewhat to do with energy in any capacity, whether it is the actual drilling or refinement, or whether it's the parts and materials made for the drilling and refinement, or if it's even exploration, anything energy related will do well as oil comes up. And of course, the opposite is true as well. But that's a component of the S&P. That's a component of the Dow to a degree. That's a component to a lot of companies within the various indices, and that's going to help, again, to a certain extent. We also saw a amazing move on the Brazilian markets as there was more political scandal. This country can't seem to get away from scandal. There was a political scandal that was uncovered. At least there was accusations of political scandal in Brazil. The currency dropped like 7%. The markets dropped about 8% or 9%. It was about a 17% total day down on the ETF that represents Brazil, EWZ. EWZ was down about 17%. Now, we looked at that and we're like, wow, that's a pretty significant amount because we're going to see probably a lot of denial come out of the Brazilian government. There'll be some fighting about keeping jobs. And even if this whole thing plays out that this scandal is actually happening, where there was some bribery, what's the outcome potential for this? What's the real downside from here? Well, we may see a lot more volatility. There may be a lot of confusion. Maybe some of the major institutions, mutual funds, hedge funds, will want to stay away from that for a little while. But really, the outcome can be one of two things. The outcome can be simply, okay, it's not true. Or it is true. If it's not true, the president stays in power and everything just plays out and probably is going to be a mad rush back into that market very shortly. If it is true, probably going to be the ouster of that president and there'll be some turmoil for a while, but then somebody comes in to take his place and therefore, what are we going to see? Probably money being pushed back into that market again. And in a market condition that we're seeing that not only are dips bought, but major destructions and explosive type of action to the downside is bought in because nobody believes that anything negative will stick to stocks or markets. It's going to be probably, we thought, a reasonable trade. So we looked at the EWZ and we looked at some of the other ETFs that play in this area. There's one that's a triple ETF for a trade, BRZU, which is, I think it was down 51% after this news broke. 51%, the ETF. It's a triple, so you take 17 times 3 and you get somewhere in that neighborhood. But this was down like 50% at the lows when we saw that Brazil was having all sorts of turmoil. Now, again, think about this. Even for an emerging market, a one-day move for an ETF when you combine the currency and you combine the stock market move of 17% or 18%, even 15%, 10% for that matter, is a pretty big move. So we bought a little bit of that for a trade. I'd encourage you to take a look at that. It's going to be very bouncy, very aggressive. It's not something that I would say it's going to be like, hey, buy and hold forever. It's not like something we're going to see that is like, the next best technology or biotech. No, it is simply a trade, something to keep your eye on. But it is something also that will affect emerging markets. And that's something that I think we'll bring up with our guest when we talk to him about some of the issues regarding this whole traditional robo-advisory. I talked about this in our last episode, and I wanted to kind of have some more detail, a little bit more fill-in of what exactly we're talking about, because we're making a pretty bold statement here. You know, we're talking about this whole idea that this whole traditional robo-advisory is really kind of a, well, I said a ripoff, but it's also, I think, been taken as, oh, this is great. It's so easy to deal with. It's so cheap. And I think people are missing the boat on really what this is and the alternatives that could be a lot better. Now, before we get to that, I want to talk a little bit about some of the economics and some of the things that went on last week that I found interesting, some of the highlights. Construction spending being one of them. Both housing starts and building permits declined in the April period for 2017. Newly released Census Bureau data showed about a 2.5% retreat for permits and about a 2.5% or 2.6% pullback for housing starts last month. The key factor was a 9.2% drop in starts for multifamily projects, which, by the way, have declined, I believe, for four straight months here, and a 4.5% fall in single-family permits. If you think about what has gone on recently, we've seen, and I can tell you locally here, it's been very pronounced, that we've seen an incredible amount of new apartments and multifamily housing go up. And if you think about why that is, it's simple. You got land prices that went up in price. Instead of buying and building on a single, let's do a multifamily and try to get rentals out of it, try to get condos out of it, get a lot more bang for our buck. And when you start to get into a saturation phase on some of this, it makes sense maybe that we're going to see a little bit of a slowdown on people rethinking the idea that maybe it's not the best thing to get into this market right now that's been so hot for some time. Industrial output surged for the month. We saw that analysts were pretty off on this. They were expecting about a 0.3 or 0.4% move on the upside. We finished a industrial output up 1%. And as I mentioned, gold and crude had rallied for the week. Gold advanced actually 2.1%, and oil moved up about 5%, WTI, that is. In terms of stocks, well, the markets took that giant plunge on Wednesday. I think it was about 1.75% for the S&P and 2.5%+ for the NASDAQ. But the NASDAQ for the week lost only 0.61% after we saw everybody say, oh, well, what was the big deal? Let's kind of buy in on Thursday and Friday. Why not? But the Dow Jones was down 0.44%, the S&P down 0.38%. Now, coming up next week, we have earnings from Agilent, America's Car-Mart, Sportsman's Warehouse, and Valspar. Tuesday, the April new home sales is coming out with AutoZone, Container Store, Crackle Barrel. We got DSW, Intuit, Take-Two Interactive, and home builder Toll Brothers. On Wednesday, existing home sales, which we'll be watching that because we saw what happened with the permits and the new housing starts. So we want to see how this follows through. And we're also going to see on Thursday minutes from the Federal Reserve policy meeting with earnings from a variety of second-tier retailers like Chico's and Fred's and Guess, Lowe's. We're also going to see Sears, Williams-Sonoma. Initial claims on Thursday, as we see every Thursday. We're also going to see continuing on with the retail, Abercrombie & Fitch, Best Buy, Burlington Stores, Costco, Dollar Tree, GameStop. What else we got here? Toro. Friday, we see the second estimate of the first quarter's GDP. Now, I was going to see if that can top 1%, which I don't know if it's going to stay at that level. May University of Michigan Consumer Sentiment Index is coming out. We know that consumer sentiment's been pretty hot for a while. And we're also going to see data on April's hard goods in Q1 and results from Big Lots. So lots going on this week. It was kind of a relatively benign week for economics last week, which I think was good. But with all the news that we had to deal with on the political front and on the market front and on the geopolitical issues and the travel plans and all that. So next week is going to be a little bit more intense, particularly with that Fed Reserve coming out on Wednesday. We'll see how they're dealing with some of the choppiness in rates that came down to one of the lowest levels of 2017 just last week. Just when you thought bonds were going to start moving up as rates were moving up by the Fed, there pops that little discussion. You saw the 10-year drop pretty precipitously into the mid part of the week. And then hold on to much of those gains as the yield dropped and the price went up, actually. So anyway, with that, I'll mention that if you have any questions, and we'll get to many of them next episode because we have a lot of things to cover in this show, go over to thedisciplinedinvestor.com and simply look where it says Ask Andrew on the top. And don't be shy. Go over there and do that. We'll answer anything we can as it pertains to investments, markets, your portfolio, your financial plan, whatever it is. I don't know. Whatever you have to discuss. Any questions that may be on your mind, this is the way to get a free answer. So go over to thedisciplinedinvestor.com, click on the Ask Andrew, and just ask away. And we'll do our best to get it on an episode or answer you directly on that question that you may have. So last week, we talked about the whole idea of this robo ripoff. And I went on a little bit of a rant and kind of discussed things. And I said that this week, we're going to have a full discussion on this whole robo-advising environment and what we've seen in these products that are out there. So Kevin Hoffman is with us. And Kevin, you've heard him before, of course. He works here at Horowitz & Company. And he is one of the creators of Investology. We'll talk about that. He also has a lot to do with the investments here in terms of our portfolios. So I thought, who better to get on to talk about this than Kevin? So Kevin, you ready to talk about this?
Yeah, let's do this.
So I guess let's start with maybe giving me a backdrop of how you see what the current robo-advisory programs are that are out there, the ones that started this whole, what would you call this, the rage, the excitement, this new type of investing.
Yeah, I mean, there's a couple different ones out there. Schwab has one. I think there's Betterment. I think there's one or two others out there. But, these all have quite a bit of limitations to them. And, those limitations can be quite detrimental to your portfolio over the long term. if you stay invested in them. And some of those limitations include the fact that they're generally only ETFs only, and most of these ETFs are passive investments. And to be honest, there's nothing wrong with passive investments, and they actually deserve a place in your portfolio, but only in certain sectors and certain asset classes. You know, sometimes in the passive space, especially in fixed income or emerging markets or small caps, there's quite a bit of inefficiencies there. And we think that there's, you know, much better options out there with regards to either mutual funds or individual stocks in order to meet those needs.
So, you know, when I talked about this last week, and I talked about the genesis of what robo-advising and robo-investing is all about, it seemed to me that it was really created as a platform to gather assets in a way that was very simplified for investors. And what it's turned into with some of these companies like Wealthfront or Betterment or Charles Schwab, and particularly the companies like even TD Ameritrade has one now, and there's a bunch of companies out there with this, it's turned out to be an asset grab that takes us back probably 25 years in the investment business, where they're looking to primarily just promote their own products inside of that as an asset grab. The old days, we would look at proprietary funds as this big no-no, like no proprietary funds can enter a portfolio. And now what's happening is that these companies have said, well, here's an end run we can do. We can create this product, this robo-advisory product that tells people that with a few simple questions, they can get their portfolio diversified in such a way that basically we put underneath that our ETFs. And therefore, we get to gather the asset management fees, if there are any, and also the asset management fees from the ETFs. It was kind of simple in the beginning, right?
Right. Yeah. And you know, there's nothing wrong with some of these types of deals where you're utilizing technology in order to give yourself a front end type of a system that you can see things clearly and, you know, use it on your mobile device and you know, kind of participate in the investment management process. So there are some good things about these types of deals, and you know, I think there's just a better way to do it, though.
Well, I mean, so let's talk about how the current robo, which I find to be, in a way, so simplified. The one that was created initially is so simplified that it's actually, I think it's a bad thing for investors. I think it lulls them into a place of complacency that, well, we can simply put our money into this model that supposedly was created by, you know, some mechanism, some algorithm, some back-tested history, and it has these ETFs, which are passive investments, and every once in a while, maybe quarterly or monthly or semi-annually, it will automatically rebalance the portfolio from the positions that are not doing well. So you put money into the ones that are doing the worst and take money out of those that are doing really well, which kind of in a way goes against the whole concept of trend trading. And it also is so simplified that I just wonder where the benefit is for the client, or if it's just simply a way, once again, for an asset grab for these firms to kind of make you think they're doing something for nothing.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it is a very low cost option, and you know, it's that set it and forget it type mentality. But, you know, a lot of times you're going to get what you pay for. You know, these robo investments, they don't have the ability to change with the times. I mean, if you think about, you know, back in history, you know, some of the time periods where, you know, tech was all the rage, or value or growth, or, you know, in the case of, you know, 2006, 2007, you'd had to have all these collateralized debt obligations and whatnot. But, you know, you got to be able to adjust and shift with the times. And that doesn't necessarily mean timing the market.
Yeah.
It means that, you know, certain times and certain places, asset classes come into favor and go out of favor. You know, real estate for one of them, you know, is a good example of that. Commodities is another great example of that. But you have to be able to shift with the times.
You know, one of the things that I think has really struck me about this whole idea of and the front end of this conversation is kind of giving the listeners, my idea for at least, is to give listeners a better understanding of what robo advice is, the traditional robo advice, and why it's actually, I think, very dangerous and very, I think it's just really just not a way to really invest long term. A part of your money if you want to play around like that, but there's something to be said about the simplicity of it and the lack of sophistication that is just basically a convenience factor. But one of the things that I think we both agree on is one of the problems you've seen is that robo-advising, traditional robo-advising, has never really been tested in down markets. In other words, the theory is that people will just go along with the whole program and not take their money out and not do anything rash, that they'll just simply go along for the long haul. And that's been fine for the last 10 years, but there's been times of volatility that markets don't always perform. And again, I'm not trying to make a market timing call here, but isn't there something to be said about this whole idea that it's really not been tested in anything other than a market that's been going up?
Yeah, I would tend to agree with you on that. And I think the bigger point here is that instead of having an advisor or someone to help you out with your decision-making process, you're really being, you're really on your own. And as a retail investor, no offense to a lot of the people out there, but retail investors have a really bad track record with market timing, and they're getting out at the low and buying at the high. And it's really been a problem over the various years.
And the other thing is that when we talk about being tested under adverse market conditions, already we know that there was one particular traditional robo advisory firm that when we had a correction in the beginning, I think it was last year, I think it was 2016, that there was a pretty rough day.
Right.
And what did they do? Well, they closed down any kind of transaction ability for at least, I think it was until mid-afternoon, maybe 1 or 2 o'clock in the afternoon, they just would not take orders. Now, they may have fixed that, but that's just one example of one situation in a market that, again, was still in a bull market, generally speaking, a small correction, a bad day. But this is what you get because, for the most part, like you said, you're on your own.
Right.
Here are the keys to your car. Thank you. Have a good day.
Yeah, no training. Just get up and start going.
Yep. So, I mean, one of the other things about this traditional robo-advising is it's generally low cost.
Mm-hmm.
And but one of the things that I think people are confusing these days, and they've been hit over the head with, high fees and hedge funds and these guys that take, 2% annual fee plus 20% profits or higher.
Right.
And, they're like, that's bad because they're not performing. And yes, markets have had a different complexion over the last number of years. And
right.
So hedge funds have been having a little bit more difficulty and passive management, investing just in the S&P, investing just in the Dow, investing just in the MSCI international or European index has done very well. And why invest and pay, 3%, 4% for a manager if they're just getting the benchmark returns? What's the point of that?
Right.
Do you think that there is something to be said about putting the cart before the horse, that it's not just simply, it's cheap, therefore I'll invest there? I mean, people seem to be getting caught up in this whole idea that, it's so cheap, it doesn't cost much, I'm just going to go with this robo deal.
Right. Yeah, I would definitely agree with you on that. And I think there's a lot of a stigma, I guess, against advisors, over the last couple of years. And much of that has to do with the fact that, we saw a lot of things in the news about Bernie Madoff and, some of the other
malfeasance.
Yeah, fraudsters and whatnot. And, people have to realize that there's still good people out there. There's still good advisors. And, turning your money over to an algorithm may not be exactly the best choice. There are a lot of better options out there.
Yeah, and especially I think we need to dig down into this whole idea of why ETFs are good in certain areas and why they are probably hazardous in others. So an ETF is a usually is structured as an index. It's an alternative to an index. You can't go and say, I want to invest in the S&P 500, and then somehow there's a button to push.
Right.
The old days, what you'd have to do is build a portfolio of 500 securities, match the actual index with a cap weighted or price weighted, whatever index you're using. And that was very difficult. Now they made it easy. They packaged it up into an ETF and at a very low cost because there's not a lot of management going on. They're just mimicking a particular index. But the question is, where is that good and where is that ill-advised?
Yeah, well, I would say, you know, very specifically, fixed income is probably the worst place to be as far as an ETF goes. And a lot of that has to do with the fact that, and most people may not know this, but, you know, the fixed income and bond markets are very illiquid, except for treasuries and maybe TIPS. But any other corporate debts or, you know, floating rate funds or even, you know, foreign emerging bonds, there's a lot of illiquidity there. And that's mostly because, you know, there are multiple CUSIPs for one particular company. You know, if you take a look at a company like Ford, right, mm-hmm. they only have one stock. It's Ford, F. Yep. That's it. Whereas, you know, if you look into their bond market at Ford, they probably have hundreds upon hundreds of CUSIPs. And a lot of those trade at a very large spread. I'll give you an example. Even from us, from an institutional standpoint, if we call 8 different brokerage houses to get quotes on one bond, we may see a difference of, you know, 5 to 10% on the actual quote.
Right.
Which, when it comes to an ETF, you know, they're just trying to invest in that index, so they may not care about pricing. But if you look at somebody who's like a professional manager, like, you know, the big houses, you know, you're talking about PIMCO or Loomis or, you know, MetWest, you know, these guys, you know, their whole goal is to beat the index. And so they're going to squeeze people on pricing.
They're going to squeeze the ETFs.
Yeah, they're going to squeeze the ETFs. Right, exactly. That, yeah. You're exactly right.
Yeah.
And, you know, that can be very troublesome for the ETF market. And another thing is that, you know, we've been in a an interest rate environment where rates have been going down for a very long period of time, which has made the bond market actually quite easy to invest in.
Oh, yeah.
So while interest rates are dropping and you're not getting any income, the price of, you know, the bonds in the past have gone up quite a bit, which has been reflected inside the ETFs. However, you know, now that we're entering into a rising interest rate environment, and, you know, people have said this for I don't know how many years, but, you know, we're now finally starting to see interest rates move up. And this is a much more difficult environment for the fixed income managers as well as the ETFs, because, you know, now you got to manage your duration, you got to manage your maturities and make sure you're set properly.
And credit.
Yeah, credit
risks. And, yep.
And all those kind of things. So, you know, really in the fixed income space, you want a professional manager. If there's any other place in asset classes that you want professional management, fixed income is definitely one of them.
Yep, I agree with that. And it's interesting, you know, we're getting into now part of the discussion of the distinction between why we looked at traditional robo-investing and said, hey, there's some really cool ideas behind all this. There's some great technology behind this. And we can look at this to be a beneficial a tool for, you know, investors and our clients. However, we absolutely think that the way they're going about it is wrong, and why, as everybody knows, we have been creating and working on Investology, which is concurrently stage one of its beta test, which is ending this week. And what we did was we're going into stage two next, and we have a good group of beta testers working on this, and then we'll open this up for everybody. But I think the point here is to understand there's a distinction. You know, it's like kind of, you know, you could buy vanilla ice cream in 10 different places.
Right.
And, you know, there may be one that's a lot better than the other for certain reasons, but it's still vanilla ice cream. And right now, yeah, we are calling this, you know, we've tagged it as advisor crafted and technology enhanced portfolio management. But it has some of the aspects of robo advising, the technology behind it. That's where it stops.
Right.
That's where it stops. It's you know, yeah, you could check online and you can check out your charts and graphs. You could change your profile and change your risk tolerance in your portfolio and get information and access it wherever you are on mobile or whatever. That's all basically the technology component of it. Now what we're doing is sticking on an advisor on it that can oversee, manage, watch the managers that are out there in terms of who's actually holding your money. Who's right. actually investing it. So let's get back to this whole idea of ETFs being a bad vehicle for some things and why we're stating this. I mean, one of the ones that comes to me as a clear example is, you know, international bonds. Now you have two components. So you have the bonds and you have the international.
Yeah, I think in any kind of international environment, whether it's equities or fixed income, you know, you may be able to get away with international stocks in a developed environment. But when you're looking at like maybe a small or mid-cap companies over in international or international bonds or even emerging markets, I think it's one of those things where you really want to have boots on the ground. You know, you want somebody over there that's overseeing some of these companies, maybe visiting those companies, finding out what the details are, getting into the nitty-gritty. Because, you know, if you're just blindly investing, a lot of times you're going to get yourself into trouble.
Let me give you a great example of this, Kevin, okay? Just this week, Brazil blew up. There was a political turmoil with the current president involved in some payoff deals and all that, and the Brazilian ETF was down 17% on the open. A lot of the stocks in there were also getting pummeled. Now, the emerging market ETF has a component by its very nature in the ETF.
Right.
Or in the Brazilian markets. Okay. It just has to. It just by policy. Mm-hmm. The emerging market ETF, EEM, was down about 2.5%. Now, why? Because there's a big, even a 10% or a 5% position in Brazil, down 17%, whacked a portion of the emerging market ETF. Mm-hmm. Now, if in fact you had a manager that, let's say they're a good manager, and let's say that they make choices that are not always constructed and created by their need to be right on the index. So they're benchmark, but they're going to go in and out. Maybe a lot of those areas would have been avoided.
Yeah, that's quite possible.
So, you know, they knew there was some problem politically, there was turmoil. So you look at things like currency risks, you look at political instability, you look at credit ratings, you look at individual companies versus an index. We're talking about just emerging markets or even international markets right now. You also look at things like language barriers, maybe also more importantly, accounting irregularities and accounting differences, because a company in Brazil, a company in China, a company in Japan does not necessarily report their information like a company in the US, whether it's going to be.
They're certainly not on GAAP.
On GAAP. Well, most of our companies aren't anymore either.
That's true.
Everybody seems to get away from that somehow. Non-GAAP earnings, you know, generally accepted accounting principles. How in the world have we allowed our companies to do this? But nonetheless.
Well, they still report GAAP. It's just it's not quite as it might be a little bit ignored now lately.
They obscure it. Right. They kind of put it to the side. Well, we're going to do non-GAAP. Anyway, so you have that. And I think one of the things that's also important here is, and I don't want to glance over this, it's the whole idea of currency. Utilizing currencies to hedge out. So for example, you could have a great ETF that is doing, you know, it's supposed to be doing the market related index, but currencies get in the way. The dollar shoots up and their currency shoots down. So if for example, the Japanese ETF was up, let's say, or the Japanese markets were up 4%, but their currency's down 2%, if you don't have the hedge version of that and you didn't know to do that, you're just blindly buying EWJ, what's happening is that you're going to have a 2% return, not a 4% return.
Right.
And vice versa. So again, you know, the whole purpose of managers, so to really drill this in is to make sure in certain areas like fixed income that's illiquid, like emerging markets that may have political instability or currency issues, like international markets that may have different accounting principles and different ways of doing business, that at least we have experts that can hopefully navigate through all of this.
Right. And the key component there, though, is that, you know, us as the advisor, we're overseeing all this. You know, we're taking a look at each individual manager and making sure that they're on the right track, making sure that they're doing what's best for the client. Otherwise, you know what? We get rid of them. We find a different manager.
You're fired.
Yeah, exactly.
You're fired.
We find a different investment vehicle that serves a better purpose for the client.
And that, you know, one of the things we did with bonds, for example, over the last couple of years is we shortened duration for clients. We shortened maturities for clients. We looked at the fact that we are probably entering into at least, if not an increasing interest rate environment, how much lower could it go? Now, it took a little bit longer to catch up to where we were thinking with what really happened, but our short and low duration funds that we have are doing great.
right,
in an increasing interest rate environment.
Yeah, and I think that's another excellent point that you make there about robos, in the fact that they're pretty limited as far as their asset classes go, especially in the fixed income space. You know, a lot of them are just using like a Vanguard total bond market index.
Right.
Now, that can be great when you have a, you know, either stagnant or declining interest rate environment. However, when interest rates start to go up, you want to consider some other asset classes, you know, like low duration bonds or floating rate bonds or even emerging and foreign bonds, you know, just to diversify, because otherwise, if you're strictly in a long-term government security bond or whatever it might be, you're going to get hammered.
Yep, in the wrong time, in the wrong place.
Right. And, you know, another thing is that, you know, on the same line, is that robos do have a limited number of asset classes, and that doesn't include maybe commodities. You know, if we're entering an environment where we're starting to see some inflation, commodities may be a great place to go to. You know, we've seen oil come down for over the past, I don't know how many years. We've seen gold come down, silver come down. You know, and a lot of people are discounting these assets and saying, oh, they're no longer relevant in the environment. But I'll tell you, if we start to see inflation, those are going to become very relevant securities.
And you're right about this, that many robos won't even touch that asset class. What you know what the other thing, I was just thinking about this, the other thing that they really won't get near is anything that's not on a standardized list.
Right.
So what I mean by that is, you know, you look at, for example, they're looking at, let me get a good example. Okay. They're looking at, for example, large caps and mid caps, and they're looking at, but what about like kind of that blended SMID, small mid cap?
Right. Yeah, they're looking at the style box. They're looking at a typical Morningstar style box and typical Morningstar asset classes. And, you know, there's nothing wrong with that, but there needs to be some other components that you bring into the portfolio in order to enhance it and, you know, to smooth those returns over time and, you know, create this uncorrelated asset class of investments. So that, you know, you get that long-term return, that's smooth. You don't get the gyrations and the volatility that, you know, sometimes will scare you out.
Right. The other thing is that I know this also, and I haven't seen this at all. They're starting to crop up a little bit in ETFs, but one of the asset classes that is very, I just haven't, I'm trying to think, but I haven't really seen any of these used at all in a robo, and for that matter, many portfolios, is kind of an alternative type of portfolio.
Right.
Right. So, I mean, explain a little bit about what alternative portfolios can do, or alternative investments.
Yeah. Alternative investments have really gotten a bad rap, I guess, over the past, let's call it 10, 15 years, you know, with the hedge fund industry and the high fees and a lot of the underperformance. And, you know, like any investments, a lot of things are cyclical and they, you know, tend to ebb and flow over time. And alternative investments and commodities, same way, have done that. They've ebbed and flowed. And right now, I think we're starting to see a good time to be into some of these alternative asset classes like long short equity or merger arbitrage or what's some of the other one? Market neutral type
credit,
strategies.
Credit.
Yeah, credit. And I think it's important that we include these still, because right now we're seeing equity valuations in the U.S. Very high, and that can be quite troublesome if you're only investing in U.S. and international equities and PE ratios are really getting out of control. And it's not to say that U.S. stocks cannot, you know, keep going higher and valuations can continue to be stretched, but you know it's always good to have and another uncorrelated asset class like alternative investments be a part of your portfolio. And now mutual funds are popping up that actually have some pretty good track records on a 5, 10, 15-year basis that charge, you know, a lot less fees. It's not that typical 2% and 20 on the hedge funds. And then they also don't have you know, the tax restrictions like getting a K-1 or anything like that. And it's not as complex anymore. You know,
and the other thing is, you know, that the funds, you know, there's also something to say, I think, with regard to alternative investments and segue into the idea of, well, what kind of funds? So there's a lot of funds out there. There's only one class of ETFs, right? There's a lot of funds out there in terms of classes. There's like A shares, B shares, C shares, Z shares, Y shares. These are all retail oriented and there's no load and low load. These are the ones that usually brokers get paid on.
Right.
They have high 12B1 fees. They have high management fees. And essentially, this is a retail, quote unquote, a retail style fund. We look for a little bit of a different criteria. Yeah, sometimes we'll use retail funds that have no load and very low cost. But we also look for something you're not going to find. And we do this, by the way, because we have the ability to do so. And that is institutional class funds. Because usually with institutional class funds, you have to have, what, about $1 million or so in invested?
Yeah, and even some of the A shares and B shares you can't get into without a, you know, a minimum amount of money. And, you know, we have the ability to aggregate accounts and have it so that, you know, if we purchased for everyone, then we get that price break where we don't have to come up with $100,000 per each person to get into that particular investment, mm-hmm. or we don't have to come up to $1 million to get into that particular investment. You know, we as an institutional manager, we have the ability to get into some of those funds that may not be able to get into as a retail investor.
But the thing is, to note on this, is that you said aggregate. So just to make sure people understand this, there's a difference between aggregation and commingling.
Right.
Commingling means that we put everybody's money into one pool and therefore it's invested. And therefore what happens is that your money is linked and kind of put into an undeterminable amount of whose money is whose, unless you put statements out that separates it.
Right. But that's not what we're doing.
No. Aggregated means that we could just tally up the investments we have in any particular investment and say, okay, we met the $1 million amount. This guy has $5,000, this guy has $2,000, this guy has, you know, $150 in it. And we can aggregate the availability for these institutional mutual funds. And you get the advantage of a person that has, let's say, a $20,000 account or a $50,000 account, whatever the amount is, of getting institutional class managers, which there is far fewer list of those than there are retail.
Right.
Available for you. It's like what would be used for college endowments, maybe some hedge funds would use those, institutions that are investing in funds for diversification. You're getting those funds at this low level. That's how we set this up. The whole point of this was, Kevin and I, how long did we sit there saying, if we can't do this, we're not going to do it?
Right.
Right? We want to have the availability of having ETFs at no trading fees. We want to have mutual funds, but institutional mutual funds available for our use, alternative asset classes, et cetera. And we want to have all these on no load and, you know, low cost, because otherwise we're not doing this. And and this is very similar, by the way, this is very similar, not exact, but very similar to what we do for our clients in the global allocations, where we have over a $500,000 minimum to get into the account. Now, on those accounts, we do some other things, like we could do some work on tax planning, estate planning, and we have a variety of different aspects of how we manage that portfolio. But essentially, many of the much of the research that Kevin and I have done on the funds and on, you know, how to allocate the portfolios, all that is going to be transposed into Investology. And the differentiator between a robo, which, by the way, may be charging you 0.25%, or Schwab is even at zero, I think, these days.
Right.
If you haven't seen, by the way, an asset grab attempt to put money into their proprietary investments, just look at Schwab with a 0% management fee for the program.
Yep.
That says it all right there.
Yep.
So, so what other things could people look for when it comes to utilizing ours? Now, sometimes you may hear of it called like a hybrid approach. We're just calling it Investology. That's what we're calling it. Okay. Whereas you get management and oversight and professional portfolio design, again, with the back end that it is technology based on the robo. But what else could people expect from this?
Yeah. I mean, one of the things that I think some of the robos lack is any kind of communication. And, you know, I think that's a big component in the investment management space, and the fact that you always have somebody there to either bounce ideas off of or get some help, you know, whether it's, you know, transferring money or opening accounts or even just taking a look at your portfolio and seeing what's going on, because, you know, you're not going to be able to talk to an algorithm. And, you know, that could be quite stressful if you start seeing the markets come down a little bit, you know, and you're like, oh, well, what do I do? And, you know, you can't sleep at night and you want to just talk to somebody, you know. That's one of the good things about having an advisor.
but wait till the morning to call. Right?
Right, of course.
Yeah, wait
or
till
email.
The morning. Yeah.
Or email.
Yeah, email's fine. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But let me ask you something. And I'm throwing this out at you, and this is not something we really announced yet. But one of the things, and so here we go. One of the things that we also just were finishing up on was the whole account aggregation process within Investology. You want to talk about that?
And what do you mean by that again?
With a consolidation where people could bring their other accounts over and they could view it on the Investology site.
Right. You're talking about being able to aggregate all your different accounts that you have over at various different places. I see.
Kevin doesn't want to talk about this because it hasn't been released. We haven't finalized the release, but let's just give it a little taste.
Right. Yeah. So, I mean, if you think about something like a mint.com, or I believe that's one of the aggregators, mm-hmm. but basically what you can do is you can bring over all your accounts, see your total net worth, kind of monitor, you know, where you're sitting at in your financial plan and, you know, things like your mortgage or your house or whatever. And it's just a great way to take a look and see how you're doing. You know, how close are you to meeting your goals? How close are you to maybe to retirement? How close are you to, you know, being able to send your kids to college? You know, these are some important things to think about over the years, because, you know, investments is – that's kind of like, you know, it's an important portion of your financial plan, but there's a lot of other things out there.
Yeah, and essentially what's going to happen is that, let's say you have an account over at Schwab or Merrill or TD or I don't know, wherever. There's a long list of possible areas that you can click on, put your account credentials in, and you can see exactly what that is next to your Investology portfolios. Now, we're not managing those. It's just a place to view it in one shot. And you've seen this, Ken. It's called account aggregation. They call it other things too. But this way, you know, okay, well, here's this portfolio what I have from my Schwab account, or here's this portfolio from my TD account, and, you know, here's my bank account at Bank of America or Wells Fargo. And you can kind of list it all on the sidebar, and it kind of keeps you all the whole process and your viewing of your finances in one place. It's pretty cool.
It's like being able to consolidate your accounts into one area.
Right.
You know, that's a great way to do it. And then that way you don't have to log into every single account in order to see what your balances are.
Yeah. The other thing I think we need to talk about, and specifically with this in mind, is the high level of security that this site has. Because we know that just the last few weeks with all the hacking and the stuff that's gone on, that it's really important to make sure that the credibility of the site and of where you're actually, you know, moving money, or, you know, where you're, you know, having account aggregation that is secure, right?
Right. Oh, of course.
So, I mean, I can tell you, and we can give you a list in the future if you want, but the high level of security in terms of the encryption and the encryption protocols, we have topped out and maxed out as best as possible. Obviously, it's your ability to keep your password to yourself. That's your whole thing. And to have a high grade password, because you set that when you enter the site. But basically, this is a very secure way to invest. Now, the other thing that really irks me is this whole idea of, you know, these robo-advisors, right? They have like 3 or 4, 5 maybe questions they ask you that's supposedly going to set up your portfolio based on some risk that they assess. You know, how old are you? Okay, that's important. You know, are you risky? Are you conservative? Okay, that's important. But we did something much different, didn't we?
Yeah.
So we looked at what would be some important questions that maybe we disguise them a little bit. And we spent some time looking at the psychology behind the questions to come up with what is a deeper dive into some risk factors. So you'll have to check out the site and see for yourself. It's nothing fancy, but a much better differentiator to help us understand where you lie on the spectrum of risk and time frame to understand how your portfolio should be set up. So we have portfolios ranging, very easy to understand. Nothing, we're not reinventing the wheel, but from conservative to moderate to aggressive, and then a couple more in between. And basically, go ahead.
There's one thing I also want to note is that, you know, I think a couple of the robo advisors, they're basing a lot of the investment risk on goals. And I'm not sure if that's necessarily the right way to go about it. I agree that there needs to be some goals set, and there also needs to be an element of risk tolerance, but there also needs to be an element of time horizon as well. So I think you need to combine all three of those things in order to develop a good understanding of what the client's needs or risk tolerance might be.
I never understood the whole goal-based investing. I mean,
Me neither.
I mean, I understand it, but I just feel you can get into a lot of trouble with that.
Right.
You know, it's one thing. Yes. What do I have a goal? I have a goal to buy a house in 10 years. I have a goal to send my children through college. Okay. I get all that.
Right.
But you know, things change over time, and we're not just simply looking to have the portfolio necessarily just change with the time period, but also the market environment and what your overall risk is. So there's a lot of things that go into it. The other thing that's really cool is that you can actually change your portfolio over time. Now, in the back end, we're going to be monitoring the actual allocation that is consistent with the risk levels that you've come up with and that we've come up with for you on your portfolio, but more importantly, managing the entire process of what managers are included, how much percent they get allocated, how much is in domestic US, how much is international, how much is in alternative, how much is in commodities, and then make the determination based on all those factors that come into play. And not just simply, here's your portfolio of, let's say, 8 different asset classes and simply rebalance them to the worst performing when they're not doing well. And you know, when that clock hits 12, oh, time to rebalance and just put it into the worst performing and bring it back up to level and take off the top from the top level. Again, you let your winners run. You know, there is some allocations that should be done to keep your model back in positioning over time. I give you that. And especially if something is getting hit hard and maybe a transitory or temporary condition. But generally speaking, that's not the only thing that should be the big ooh-ah about how you manage a portfolio, because that's all the traditional robos have, is this whole idea of rebalancing.
Right.
That's the whole ooh-ah excitement. Oh, yeah, they automatically rebalance, man. It's like, really? Well, that should be done anyway.
Right.
Anyway, you can check out Investology. We think that we should have it running up and running soon. The reason why we're spending so much time is because we're kind of, would anal be the right word and appropriate, or are we very conscientious? I'm not sure what the right word is, but
we just want to make sure it's right. You know, we want to make sure it's good for the client and not just something that you throw out there and, you know, have an algorithm run. If we wanted to do that, we could have it up already.
Yep, exactly. So it'll be out soon. You can sign up and find out more information over on investology.com or on the disciplinedinvestor.com. Just go down to where it says on the homepage where it says Investology, and there's some stuff on there for you to take a look at. Actually, that's the best place to look right now, is over on the disciplinedinvestor.com. Kevin Hoffman, thanks as always for coming on and giving us a good deal of information regarding this. And we hope that we'll have this running soon. Everybody's going to see the spirit of our work and the hard work we put into this. I think it's going to be a great opportunity for clients. Well, a big thank you to Kevin for joining us today. And I'm sure he'll be on again. If you want to see some of his writings, we have some things that we write about, our thoughts, comments in our journal over on The Disciplined Investor. We don't just write a lot of junk. Just when something sparks our fancy, we put it up there for your enjoyment and review. Otherwise, you can follow me on Twitter. You can listen to us each and every week here. Of course, DH Unplugged on Tuesday nights, which comes to you live at 9 p.m. at dhunplugged.com. Or you can find us on any of the podcasting platforms. Just put my name in there, or The Disciplined Investor, or Dvorak, or DH Unplugged, and you'll be able to download those when they're just up and ready. Thank you for joining me. I hope to see you again soon. Hopefully you'll get with some of your friends and tell them how you enjoy what we're doing here. Again, thanks. Appreciate your being here. Appreciate you listening. Appreciate you sending in your questions and being a part of the show. I'll talk to you next week. Bye-bye.
The information presented in this podcast is not intended to be used as the sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should it be construed as advice designed to meet the investment needs of any particular investor. Some discussion contains forward-looking statements which are based on current expectations, and differences can be expected. None of the information presented should be construed as an offer to sell or buy any particular security. As always, use your best judgment when investing.